Hello and welcome to the Astor Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astor Investment Management. I am joined today by my friend and partner, Rob Stein. Rob, hello.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. Thank you. We're recording this a little bit after the latest payroll number. It's Friday, the 6th of June, and we're going to try and process it for you. Before we jump into the details, I'm going to say that my sort of nutshell view of the economy has become a little bit more nuanced. And I'm going to say, my reading of the economy is healing, not booming. That's my catchphrase. What do you think of that, Rob?
It's healing and sort of booming. But if you look at it, if you look at it in a in a vacuum, it looks like it's booming. But I would agree in the where we're coming from and what's happened over the last, 3 months. Yeah, healing.
Right. And so I think this is a little bit disappointing from sort of this space we'd all gotten ourselves to in January, February, where we thought, we're going to have the Biden boom to kick off the roaring 2020s, right? And it seems like it's going to be a little bit more subdued compared to that. I think if you'd told me, 9 months ago what these numbers would be, I'd be pretty happy with it. But these are a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I might not be as disappointed because I didn't think it would be turning on a light switch. And yep. So for me, the jury's still out a little bit. We're going in the right direction. The ISMs are doing well, and we are adding jobs. And John, I also think that when you're counting this many jobs in a short period of time, 3-4 weeks, it's not as accurate or as efficient back in the day when you'd get the number forecast wrong by 10,000, you were considered a knucklehead.
Right.
And the revisions, I guess this revision wasn't
revisions were quite
crazy.
They were pretty small.
Yeah, the revisions are pretty small so far. But the direction, COVID was just a unique hunker down situation. Again, not a green light is on, let's all go. So I'm not yet throwing in the towel that we don't have quarter over quarter, Q3 to see that acceleration that we all thought was going to be coming 2 quarters ago.
Right. Let's jump in with the numbers. So again, the sort of highlight of this week, highlight of every month is usually the payroll number. Today, so the number came out as we added 559,000 new jobs. That's up compared to 278 last month, and compared to a forecast of about 675 or so. So under expectations. So what I kind of want to take away from that number, though, is that average job growth is around 540,000 jobs a month. And that's totally good, right? Like that's a totally solid number. The change in private payrolls, was about 60,000 less than the non-farm payroll. So that's about 60,000 government jobs added. Like, I'm guessing at this point in the school year, we're not going to see substantial increase in that until the next school year starts beefing up again. And, because we've mentioned a few times, state and local employment is down substantially. And hopefully a lot of that is sort of temporary, and as schools and rec centers and stuff like that get spinning up again, that will be addressed.
I agree with that.
Unemployment rate dropped from 6.1% to 5.8%. Dropped for good reasons. People going into employment. Average hourly earnings were strong. I want to talk about earnings and hours in a sec. Labor force participation rate dipped down a tick unexpectedly and disappointingly So now a labor force, about 61.6% of Americans are in the labor force, and the underemployment rate improved as well from 10.4% to 10.2%. So kind of getting into some of the details here. So the earnings are up, right? So month on month, our average hourly earnings year on year is up 2%. So what I think that is telling us is something, a story about the composition of employment, and mainly that like low income people are not getting their jobs back, right? So that's why the average hourly earnings has gone up.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a little bit transient, but I do think that you will see overall an aggregate higher amount of a higher level of wages.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a possibility. So there are questions about why there aren't more jobs being added, and you know, so I think sort of the anecdote is, you know, about the ice cream stand, which can't hire anybody for, you know, $10 an hour. So now has to offer $13 an hour to the teenagers. You know, and I think there's some of that going on, but there's a few things that don't fit with that narrative. There's sort of the narrative of people don't want to take jobs that are out there, right? And there's a certain truth to that, right? Like job openings are extremely high. Conference board measures of jobs are easy to get are extremely high. But there's a couple of things that don't go along with that narrative. And one of which is people who are employed part-time for economic reasons, meaning that they've got part-time employment, but would like more hours. That number has not moved in a few months. And so presumably, like if you're an employer and you wanted, you need to hire people, but you can't, like, wouldn't you just give your existing people more hours, right?
Yeah, I guess the, you know, there's certain types of occupation that you just need another hand on deck and not just more hours. You know, the ice cream store example, you're not going to be able to serve more customers if you have one server and they're working more hours. And those are the type of jobs I think that more likely need to be filled, not just solved by more hours for the person that's working.
Yeah, so I think it's a couple things. Well, one is, yeah, so it's important to measure that, you know, leisure and hospitality added 300,000 jobs in May, by far the most of any industry. It's led job growth for 4 months, but it is still down 14% from where it was in February 2020. So making strides, but still has a long way to go. And we're also still about 7 million jobs below the trend where we would have expected to be. So I think that there is, I think there is something going on with people who got separated from their jobs, and like the matching process is not working, you know, sort of as well as we would hope. So one thing you can see is that the number of employees who were reporting on temporary layoff fell below 2 million for the first time since the pandemic began. Permanent layoffs is basically steady. So, you know, people who were, you know, well, you have to take you have to go on furlough for a bit, but we'll hire you back. Like most of those people, a lot of those people are back at work. There's still a good chunk of people who expect to go back to their previous employer, but a lot fewer than there used to be. Just one more thing before we leave the world of the pure labor market, and that is jobless claims. They continue to attenuate the level of people getting unemployment benefits has dropped, and the number of new people applying for new benefits is dropping. So that is going in the right direction as well. So sort of related to employment, we've got the numbers on personal income and expenditures, which is a super interesting number. This is numbers for April, so that's kind of a long time in terms of COVID years. But personal income is back, aggregate personal income is back to trend, which is something considering that we're 7 million jobs in the hole, right? And so why is that? It looks like it's mainly because of low wage. Most of the employment that was lost was low wage. And a lot of that is being made up for by jobless benefits. And the people who have jobs seem to be working longer hours for higher wages in the aggregate. Now, personal expenditures have not quite caught up the trend, though they've made a lot of the way back. Though the composition, as we talked about before, like the composition of personal expenditures is really strange compared to our history, where services are, you know, like 10% below trend, and goods are, you know, 10% above trend. So that is where we are in the services, in the, sorry. And so that is where we are in this income expenditures. The only other thing to mention is that we still have about probably $2 trillion of excess savings.
Yeah.
And the question is, like, is that wealth that you spend at 5% a year? Or is it like you won the lottery and you spend that 50% a year?
Right. Yeah. So first, I'm not so sure that there's that much surprise in the manufacturing versus service. You know, I think it reverts back. But I would suggest that the savings rate is maybe more, I'm leaning towards more wealth. You have a lot of assets that have appreciated. A lot of transactions have gone on. I think if it wasn't, we'd see the savings rate come down a little bit, right? If it was people banking their stimulus check with the unemployment rate so high, I think you would see much more movement in the savings rate. And banks still have a real lot of money that they're hanging on to.
Right.
Deposits at banks are at all time highs.
Yeah. So you're thinking that people see this more as wealth and less as like a transfer that they would spend more of? Is that your take?
Yes. Yes. Cause I think the number would be moving more than it has in the last, I don't know, 90 days.
Right. That's certainly possible. So next, I think on the agenda would be the ISM numbers. They continue to be very strong. So these, again, they did the purchasing manager surveys, where the model is to go around the companies and ask them, you know, how's business? Is it better or worse than last month? And many, many people are saying it's better than last month. Those numbers are basically close to all-time highs, you know, maybe off a little bit from the tippy top of the peak, depending on the exact series that you look at. But those are very strong. So one thing about that I do want to mention, so like they break it out into manufacturing, non-manufacturing. And so on the one hand, you've got those PMIs at all-time highs, manufacturing PMIs all-time highs. On the other hand, like if you go and look at the level of industrial production, not the change in industrial production, that is still quite modest, right? So that's the level of industrial production is well below its, you know, 2012 to 2018 average. It's about the level it was in the manufacturing recession of 2016, a little bit below that. So it is not, you know, it's complicated how you would map in these sort of trying times, right, where you've got such odd, you know, adjustments to the economy. Like, I'm not sure you can map the ISM numbers or the purchasing managers numbers exactly to economic growth the way you used to. Like, it's definitely good news, but, you know, we're still, you know, substantially below the peak in manufacturing output, when if you, all you had was looking at the PMIs, you would see that that was, you would think it was the opposite.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
So in internal to the PMIs, so there are some interesting sort of sub indices that are going on, right? Like new orders extremely high, backlog of orders, you know, well, super all-time highs, customer inventories all-time lows. That's positive, right? Like more customer, lower the customer inventory, the better for the manufacturers. Supplier deliveries are low. Employment is just average, considering all of these, how bullish everything is. And I think, you know, and this ties into the bigger inflation story. Like, I think the story is still, you know, substantial logistical disruptions, right? Like the number of shipping containers. The shipping containers aren't in the right place, and you know, people can't buy the right amount of stuff because the factories are running full out because, you know, manufacturing demand is 10% above normal. And so I think there's just sort of logistical mismatches. And I think this leads into the inflation story too, right? Like inflation is not so much like a wage price spiral, but that, you know, we're kind of out of bikes. And so we're going to allocate them by price instead of, you know, by, you know, lottery or whatever. What do you think?
Yeah. So I've been thinking something like that for a while. I do believe that they were hesitant to raise prices for those reasons because of so-called shortages. But I do think that we're starting to see that now, and prices are inelastic on the downside, at least in the short run, until, you know, they need to get rid of supply, you know, the boom bust. So I think that is going to be one of the reasons that we're going to have at least price inflation. With the amount of liquidity that's in the market, if it starts to circle around, the velocity of money picks up, I do think you will see inflation pockets. So I can't tell you exactly where, but I do think aggregate, you know, some things aren't going to go up at all. Other prices, I think, will go up substantially more than anticipated, and you'll get this overall higher inflation. And, you know, some of the things that are transient that they take out of it, you know, like food and energy, you know, might, because those prices have gone up substantially, might have it appear a little softer. But, you know, I'm thinking that we enter into an inflationary cycle. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Right. I guess we'll see about that. You know, the short-term inflation expectations have gone up a lot. Longer-term inflation expectations have gone up somewhat, not sort of as high, sort of at the upper end of its range, but not sort of spiking like next year inflation expectations.
Yeah, I agree, John, that expectations have really accelerated, and that sort of gives me a bit of a pause that maybe, you know, rates have gone, you know, as high as they will for this initial rally. Inflation has spiked to where it will level off for a while. Obviously, we're going to have the comparisons from next year, which will look awful. I mean, from last year. But I could agree that
it's starting to roll off, though.
Yeah, a couple. You're right. They are. Few more months.
And if you look at so the San Francisco Fed has a consumer price series broken out into COVID sensitive and COVID insensitive products. And so the COVID sensitive products is, you know, up 4% year on year. The insensitive, and, you know, at a high, the insensitive products are up 2% year on year and kind of just average. So that's another story that the, basically that the sort of logistical problems will work themselves out, and like we allocate stuff by price, and like that's the signaling mechanism, right? So we need more bikes and fewer, I don't know, COVID stuff or whatever we don't need more of. And over time, and in a pretty quickly,
sweatpants,
we're going to need fewer sweatpants as we all go back to the office. Or we'll go to like the office in sweatpants, maybe, who knows? So like, but over time that will, and not too long, that will, you know, resolve itself, just like the supply problems that we had this time last year resolve themselves, you know, sort of more quickly than anybody really anticipated, right? Like people were like, we get masks, and like, no, it wasn't.
So that's a good point, right? Resolving itself over time from the influences COVID has had. And I guess that's the tougher thing to forecast, because we have an event that's unlike any other, and you can look at other disruptive events, but they're all unique in their own right. And so at some point, I think the data, the direction of the data, the acceleration of the data, including stock prices, will revert back to their behavior that, you know, we've been able to use in now casting. And so it's sort of, you know, this is, I think this, you think that, you know, I'm reading this, I'm reading that. This is too fast. This is too slow. And I think, and we're closer to it than you think, that the data will be the data, or the data will be the way we've looked at it in the past, and it'll tell the same stories that historically we've read from them. And this will all be just something that'll be in a textbook at some point.
Yeah, I guess the question is like whether we have hyperinflation between now and then, but and we've got sort of different.
I think we already have, right? We already have.
Hyperinflation is 50% year on year.
you don't think that's high?
Yeah, 50% year on year is high, but we haven't had that, right? So you can cut the hyperinflation stuff. So do you want to, I think that's it. Do you want to talk about like the sort of the other stuff?
Like what other stuff?
Well, there's just some like the higher frequency stuff, or just like, or just like end it there.
You know, I think you could pop it in real quick just because it's consistent. You know, foot traffic, you're talking about that stuff, foot traffic, theater tickets, yeah. Airline miles, gasoline.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So why don't I just say, ready? Yep. Hey, John, why don't you recap some of the higher frequency data that we've been looking at lately? It's interesting, if not telling, but I really like the way that data gives you at least a short-term, quicker view.
Yeah, so we're looking at some of the higher frequency stuff, which also don't have longer histories, but you know, basically that stuff is showing a similar story where a lot of this stuff is going back to pre-COVID levels. So I'm thinking about things like the open table U.S. seated diners, where it's at a pandemic high, back to normal levels, TSA security clearances at a post-pandemic high, still substantially below, somewhat below typical levels that obtained in 2019. Las Vegas foot traffic at a post-pandemic high, the hotel occupancy getting higher. So a lot of this higher frequency stuff that we were trying to look at to try and get a better handle on the economy in these strange times. A lot of that stuff is looking better, either back to normal or, you know, back to post-pandemic highs.
Sorry. Right.
So other things that are interesting looking at there would also be things like the year steel production, the level of temporary staffing is very high. Retail traffic is high year on year as well. So a lot of that stuff is moving in the right direction.
Right, and what we've noticed is that data tends to be consistent with the traditional data 30, 60 days out.
Yeah, so you can reconcile that to to unemployment or output numbers in the fullness of time. And I think, start again. So I think we'll leave it there. Again, my economy in a nutshell is that the economy, certainly the labor market in particular, is healing, not booming. And the economy is subject to a lot of logistical stresses based on changing patterns of consumption, which I expect to to take care of itself over time. Do you have a last word, Rob?
I tend to agree. Healing, not booming. But I believe that it's just the time frame that we're looking at. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yep. So I'll see you in the IC. Thanks for listening. Great. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate it and tell a friend. If you want more economic data, you should look at our website, AsterIM. That's AsterInvestmentManagement.com, where you can find back issues of the podcast. You can find blog posts, commentary, and you can download our app from the.
App Store.
I'm getting heckled by my teenager. You can download our app from the App Store, our research app from the App Store as well. Thanks for listening.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.